Welcome to CI, Confronting the Issues, bringing a progressive faith perspective to the issues of today. And we're live from the Leland Tea Company in San Francisco. I'm your host, Risha Ann Young, and I'd like to welcome you to the first edition of CI, Confronting the Issues. And our edition today is the Rainbow Church. Is Christendom ready or not? But before we get into our topic, I'd like to take a minute and talk about our venue here at the Leland Tea Company and what a great friend we have and supporter for this program, because it almost did not happen today. You got very short notice, like 20 minutes notice yesterday, that they're going to be doing construction outside and shutting him down for 2 weeks. So I thought, I have no venue today, but he decided to come in and open this place up just for us and this program today. So I really, really am in a big thank you for Will, the owner here at the Leland Tea Company, which has some of the best baked goods and stuff in the city. And I apologize to my guest here with me in the studio that he doesn't get to sample too many of the goodies today. And of course, Harry, you're in Washington, D.C., so no goodies for you. But the church, every generation of the church is faced with an issue that is usually so big and so contentious that it runs the risk of splitting denominations and congregations. In the 18th and 19th century, the issue is slavery. And we still see the results of that on Sundays in what Martin Luther King Jr. used to call the most segregated day in America. And today, as we enter the 21st century and enter the third millennia, the issue is the inclusion of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in our communities of faith. And so that's the big issue, whether you're talking marriage equality, ordination of gay clergy, whether you're going to ordain a transgender minister. It all really boils down to, how are we going to include lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, or LGBT. You'll hear us say that a lot today. How do we include them in our faith communities? Or with some groups, do we even include them? I mean, that it becomes an issue of if, and with some an issue of when and how. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And mainly, we're going to start today with a broader picture of it, both from a political and social angle, and the broader look at inclusion of LGBT people in communities of faith. So joining me today as guests are, first, from Washington, D.C., the Director of Faith and Religion Programs for the Human Rights Campaign, Harry Knox. And Harry, could you take a quick minute and tell us a little bit more about yourself and your work at HRC?
Well, thank you, Risha, and congratulations on the inauguration of this great program. I know you're going to have a wonderful time doing it, and that your audience is going to build over time, because your voice is so important. And I'm glad that you've given me the opportunity tonight to share a little bit with you about our work at the Human Rights Campaign. The Religion and Faith Program at HRC exists to give a big megaphone to faith leaders around the country who are willing and able to speak out for us. And there are, of course, thousands and thousands of them now. And the other part of our work is to equip our own folks, LGBT people of faith, and our allies who are people of faith, to use faith language in advocacy in the political sphere.
Great. Also joining me here in San Francisco is the coordinator of Coalition of Welcoming Congregations in San Francisco, the Reverend Roland Stringfellow. And Roland, would you tell us a little bit about your work there and also your work at CLGS?
Yes, thank you very much. And again, it is an honor indeed to be on this program. So my work at the Center for Lesbian Gay Studies in Religion and Ministry at the Pacific School of Religion, which is located in Berkeley, California. My role as the coordinator of the Bay Area Coalition of Welcoming Congregations, I do faith organizing among those congregations that are welcoming or open and affirming.
Okay, we're going to commercial. If you can hold that, we're going to a real short one-minute break, then we'll be right back, and Roland can continue describing his work in both organizations. And so grab a pen and pencil, top off your coffee or iced tea, and be ready because I'll be opening up the phone lines in about the second quarter of the show after we kind of get going. So jot down any questions or comments you may have for us.
Welcome to the Church of Total Acceptance. If you're a divorced single parent, press 1 now. Goodbye. Welcome to the Church of Total. If you're gay or lesbian, press 2 now. Goodbye. Welcome to. If you're overweight, have a mullet, or anything polyester, press 3 now. Goodbye.
God doesn't filter people out, neither do we. The United Church of Christ. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here. The United Church of Christ, where God is still speaking.
If you have a bumper sticker on your car, question authority, or otherwise think for yourself, please hang up now and have a nice day.
The United Church of Christ. To find the congregation that's right for you, go to ucc.org.
And we're back live at the Leland Tea Company with CI, Confronting the Issues. And my guest, Roland Stringfellow, was just beginning to describe his work both at the Center for Lesbian and Gay Studies at the Civic School of Religion and also his other work on LGBT advocacy.
Yes, thank you. And so simply put, I work with congregations beyond just Christian, Jewish, some Buddhist gatherings that are welcoming, open, and affirming to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender individuals, to do faith organizing amongst them. Largely my work has entailed work around marriage equality. That seems to be the large topic that progressive congregations are dealing with at the moment.
Great. Well, as you can probably guess, most of us here on this program are supporters of LGBT equality. And before we get really going into the discussion of how and the full inclusion, there are a couple of what I call 800-pound elephants in the room, especially for some of our audience who may have some history with both the HRC and other movements within the equality field. And so, Harry, this question is really for you. I was one of the transgender educators for the Human Rights Campaign in their gender and our faith communities curriculum. And as I went on those, I often encountered criticism of the HRC for their role and how they handled the 2006 attempt to pass a fully inclusive, that is, a bill that included gender identity in the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Well, I also have found lately some of similar criticism of HRC regarding the lack of progress in the Congress on the LGBT positive issues and also the administration, a lot of blame and everything going to HRC. So I kind of want to clear that out of the room now before we get started. So Harry, could you respond a little bit to that?
Sure. Well, 2 years ago, we lived through as a community the most difficult conversation that I have seen in my 23 years in LGBT advocacy, and it was terribly painful for all of us, but particularly for our transgender sisters and brothers. What happened, of course, was that a fully inclusive version of the bill was introduced, and the leadership in the House, the Democratic Party leadership, told us that there were 40 votes short for passage of the bill, and that if we tried to pass the bill and failed, that it would really victimize the legislation for as long as 10 years, that we would give away essentially a generation of work, because legislation has a trajectory that needs always to be on the upswing. Coalitions are built, things are added to bills, they grow over time to what you really want them to be. They usually pass both houses of the Congress two or three times before they are passed in a final version that goes to the president's desk. And we were told, you know, the votes just are not there for transgender inclusion, but they are there for LGBT protections. And we've really given a Faustian choice to choose to back a bill that we did not want to go, with the knowledge that it was not going to get to the president's desk, and that even if it did, he was going to veto it anyway, so the bill would not become law. And we decided to go ahead and back passage of it in the House in order to help it continue to go forward, knowing that with a new president and a new Congress that we would be backing only transgender-inclusive legislation this time. Unfortunately, we let about a week go by without explaining that to the country, and particularly to our transgender sisters and brothers, and we got a predictable response. There was a terrible amount of anger in the country that really just tore up the community, and it's still very, very painful. What we did in our program at HRC was take those 40 districts, though, as an ordination. We have eaten, slept, and breathed them for the last 2 years. And Risha and a number of other transgender educators have really been tremendously brave in stepping up in spite of their distrust for HRC and their anger at us to help us put together a resource for congregations to use to really educate progressive Christians about transgender people, to help them to be better, us all, to be better advocates for trans people in the public sphere. And we set up meetings like the ones we had at our Clergy Call for Justice and Equality in May, where we brought the clergy people from congregations in those 40 districts where we made those educational opportunities happen to Washington to talk to their members of Congress. That went something like this. You know, the pastor said, "Congresswoman, we didn't know anything about transgender people, and we bet you don't either." And the response was usually, "You are right about that." And they said, "Well, we had this wonderful conversation in our local church back home in the district, places like Alton and Carbondale, Illinois, and Jonesboro, Georgia. You know, not our usual suspect kind of gay ghetto places, but really Blue Dog Democrat kind of districts. We had that conversation back home in the district at our local church, and we had a wonderful time, learned a lot about folks that we've come to love, learned that there were many people in our community that we didn't even know about who are transgender. And by the way, we learned about the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and we've got your back home in the district if you'll support a fully inclusive version of that." And so In the 2 years that have passed in between, we've been working really hard to actually move people in those districts and those members of Congress to be able to support a fully inclusive version, which is, of course, what we all supported all along. Now we're in a situation where the President and the Congress have multiple issues on their plates, and a lot of people have wanted to say, you know, well, we can't, and the Congress have said, why? We can't get done everything we want to get done right now because we've got to focus on two wars and the economy and health care. And HRC has said in response, and really our whole community has said, sorry, no excuses. If you can't get this done with a two-thirds majority and a president of your party in the Congress, then you're just not good at it, and you need to go home. We are not accepting any more excuses. We began in July No Excuses campaign, where we empowered people, again, particularly in those priority districts, but all over the country, and more than I'm losing the number in my head. Seems to me 1,500 volunteers around the country went to see their their legislators while they were home for the August recess and said, seriously, Senator, seriously, Representative, no excuses. This is fully mature legislation, the employment bill, as well as the Matthew Shepard Hate Crime Prevention Act, and we need to get them passed and get them passed now. The President is governing very much the way Franklin Roosevelt did. There's a great story about President Roosevelt that the labor leaders came to see him one day and gave him their list of demands. And supposedly at the end of the meeting, he said, "Fellas, I agree with everything you've said. Now get out there and make me do it." And for good or ill, I think that's the way President Obama is talking to our community. He said, "I'll sign anything you can pass. Now get out there and make me do it." And we have got to keep the heat on the Congress and the president. Both need to be giving leadership in order to really make them step up to the plate now, because really, this is the time to do it.
Well, I know we're all really hopeful, since the president's going to be the keynote speaker at your annual dinner this weekend, just on the same weekend as the March on Washington. But we have another kind of 800-pound gorilla in the room. Well, maybe not 800 pounds, maybe 500 pounds. And that's because in California, the passage of Prop 8, of course, saddened most of us in the community, disappointed us, angered many of us. But there was a controversy about whether to push for repeal of that in the 2010 election or the 2012. Some people felt that 2012 would be better. We'd have more time to raise more money, that voters were tired. It's, you know, it'd be a long, hard fight. And so they advocated for the later time to give what they feel is a greater chance of victory. There are others who want it done now. And because their frustration, and they really believe that we can still do it in 2010. So, Roland, you work with Equality California and other marriage equality groups in the state. So could you please kind of give us up to date and get us past that one so we can kind of clear that one out of the room?
Absolutely. And there are great arguments on either side, the 2010-2012 argument. And I know for my friends on the side of 2010, you know, they feel, you know, the time is right. There's no reason to wait or hold back, because this issue is still on the forefront of many people's consciousness. And just when it comes to the grassroots support of a variety of organizations that are banding together for marriage and family equality, the activity seems to be, you know, high. The 2012 camp, I understand, you know, they feel that they need to have more time for fundraising, more time for public education. And for many people who are, who've been involved with political campaigns, and they really want to see Obama elected to his second term, they want to be available for that reelection effort. And so, any case, that's the 2010 camp. But nonetheless, with my position with representing so many progressive congregations, I generally take a neutral stand, because, you know, I work well with both of those camps. Personally, which I don't mind, you know, sharing that, particularly when I'm asked, I'm in the 2012 camp, and I just know for myself, after the heartbreak of a year ago, you know, I'm still recovering, to be quite honest. You know, when you put your heart and soul into an effort, and then for it not to come to pass, you know, it is time to, you know, one, catch your breath, to look at the strategies that are out there. And I know for myself, who is involved with faith organizing, my own particular agenda has been to try to get these organizations like Equality California, Courage Campaign, to make sure that faith organizers are brought to the table with any campaign, whatever it's going to look like. And I know that my colleagues at California Faith for Equality have been fighting for that as well.
Great. Thank you, Roland, for that update. And we're going to, at about a quarter after, we're going to be heading into a break. And right after that, I'm going to open up the phone lines. So if you have any questions or comments for any of my guests or for us in general, please don't hesitate to give us a call. The toll-free number is 888-228-4494, excuse me. And then 530-776-5144 or 530-776-5144. 776-5154, line 2, and 530-413-4522 for line 3. And we have one more line at 415, for those of you in the Bay Area, 287-0074. So get your pens and pencils, get ready, and call in early so you don't run into any jams or log jams or delays on any incoming calls. And before that, we will be getting into more of our specific questions about including lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people after the break. And we'll be using, I'll be using actually some of the questions that I used in my transgender seminars. Things that will go to both of these, like what do you believe transgender people or lesbian, gay, and bisexual people bring to the Christian table, bring to a congregation? What unique skills, viewpoints do they bring? Do the inclusion of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people affect your view of God and how you perceive the divine? And if so, how? How does that impact your view of the divine? And so go ahead and get ready. We welcome your comments and things after we come back from break. But Roland, what about some of your initial thoughts on that? Or Harry, some of your initial thoughts about what do lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people bring to a congregation?
With this is Roland. With my work with inclusive congregations, they recognize that whenever you open the doors to all people and welcome all people to the welcome table, as they say, your ministry is much more richer. The outreach is also greater because to have this inclusive ministry where everyone is welcome no matter what their sexuality, what their income level is, whatever, you know, welcoming the pregnant teen mother to the divorce, whatever. When it comes to welcoming, it's more broader than just, you know, sexual and gender identity. It really is welcoming anyone who is wanting to have a relationship with the living God. And I believe that all congregations should be have that as their mission, and to work for ways to not to look at to ways to exclude or divide, but to how to open up and make that welcome as grand as possible.
Great. Harry, you're at a national level, and you direct many of your programs. You have a lot of resources for inclusion, the Out in Scripture for clergy and lay leaders and other resources. But how do you see right now the whole status, or see kind of where it's at about inclusion of LGBT people in faith communities?
Well, Roland is exactly right. It really is the growth end of the religion industry, if you think about it in market terms. LGBT inclusion is proving to be a radically inclusive agenda that actually draws people to mainline churches in ways that they haven't seen growth in many, many years. The Bible says that the truth will set us free. And LGBT people are telling the truth in love in ways that the church hasn't done around sexuality in a long, long time. And in our being truthful about ourselves and helping people to understand our situations, we are giving straight people the freedom to do the same thing with that hardest of all topics, their own sexuality. And they are beginning to feel that they and their children are safer in congregations that really wrestle with these things and wrestle them with for a blessing. And they're finding tremendous growth opportunities and evangelism opportunities in that.
I think as we look at a more practical approach, and those are more to-do, kind of, you know, what can we do kind of approach, what do you believe, and this could be to either one of you, so feel free to comment or chime in, what do you think is one of the most important things that a congregation could do to really begin to open up to LGBT people or any marginalized group?
Well, I know here in the Bay Area, I had a conversation recently with gentleman who, his congregation took a I do, meaning they support marriage equality, put a I do sign in their window so passerbyers could see that, you know, they are open to same-sex marriage. That caused a lot of conflict within the congregation. One of the things that I was sharing with this gentleman, he was calling me to ask, you know, my opinion on what to do. And particularly if it is a progressive congregation that has taken stands on social justice issues, I was sharing that I believe that having that sign up adds to their prophetic voice in that community, to let people know that they are a congregation that believes in the inclusion of all people and that all are welcome here. So simple things is putting a sign out front, hanging a rainbow flag from your, you know, from your door, making sure that you are paying attention to what's happening in the community where gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people are gathering. Because one of the best ways to do that outreach is to make sure that you are building those bridges, because there's so much fear and distrust when it comes to religious institutions, organizations, congregations, by LGBT individuals who've been hurt or excluded or shunned. And so, again, I would just suggest that find out where the activities are, making sure that you're there, whether it's a pride parade, whether it's a community booth, to let people in the general community know that you are a progressively open and affirming, welcoming congregation.
Harry, what do you find? I mean, we're here in the Bay Area in kind of what I call the bubble, where generally speaking, I mean, it's not perfect, and there are still pockets of homophobia and transphobia here within our own city, in our own general Bay Area. But you deal nationally, so you see what happens in a lot of other areas that are what I used to term as outside the bubble. They're outside of us nutty and crazy Californians, and they're out there in places where somehow people are in actual physical danger. And so it is a dramatic step for some congregations to make an open and welcoming pledge or to be that because of their communities and the feelings and stuff there. So what are you finding about that as you look at other areas?
Well, what we're finding, Rishi, nationwide, is that the first step is always to deal with another one of those 800-pound gorillas, which is the scriptures.
Yes.
You know, many times LGBT folks are loath to deal with the scriptures because they've been used as a weapon against us. And I understand that, of course, completely. I've been there myself. But the fact of the matter is that in faith communities, people have got to know that you respect their sacred texts and are really interested in what they truly say, and that you are willing to do the work and the study with the texts that you're asking them to do. And so I think a great way to start for a congregation that is not yet ready to go into an open and affirming or reconciling or more light kind of a process where they'd be moving toward an actual vote for LGBT inclusion, but are really just dipping a toe in the water, is to look at the curriculum that we developed at the Human Rights Campaign that goes along with the movie For the Bible Tells Me So. It's a wonderful congregational-based resource with a license to show that film that is at a much, much, much reduced rate, $50, compared to the $300 or $350 or so that it usually takes to license the showing of the film. And the curriculum is designed so that a knowledgeable layperson or a pastor can, or a rabbi or imam, can use it to teach people what the Christian scriptures say and don't say about homosexuality, and to help people begin to not just debunk the clobber texts, those seven deadly texts that are used against us all the time, but also to see the positive frames in the Bible, of which there are so many, community and justice and care for the neighbor and understanding for people that are not like us, unconditional love, all of those kinds of frames are ways that we can be looking at the scriptures together and at the larger issue of LGBT inclusion. And that is really proving to be very, very positive for folks. They're finding that it's a conversation they can have. It's multimedia and it's fun and it's a chewable bite for congregations. And then if they're ready to move from that, they really should look at their own denomination, at their LGBT advocacy organization, groups like More Like Presbyterians and Reconciling Ministries and the Methodist Church and the LGBT Coalition for LGBT Concerns in the UCC. All those groups have processes for real deep study to help congregations move to policy statements about that if they want to go deeper. And they can people can find out about that by looking at the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force's website at welcomingresources.org or taskforce.org, and they can look for the curriculum that I described from HRC at hrc.org.
I know that obviously I was one of the educators involved with the transgender curriculum, and so I'm somewhat familiar with the resources that HRC has developed, which are generally free and online for congregations or anyone in a congregation who wants to start the process of getting that. There's also, I happen to belong to the United Church of Christ, and in their coalition for Lesbian and Gay Concerns, they have a great resource for looking at the clobber scriptures called Biblical Self-Defense. And it's really a great and fun. They have both a seminar and some printed material that you can get, but it's kind of a fun way to look at those scriptures and what they really say and what they don't say, and then to take you back to the positive aspects of scripture. Although some of that was aimed at youth, I found it to be a wonderful process when I encountered it at one of our regional gatherings recently this summer. So,
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to get in a word for our folks at SoulForce,
sure,
too. Their resource really appeals to people who are dealing with the Bible from an evangelical standpoint. And if LGBT folks are, you know, talking with family members who are part of evangelical traditions, the resource that they have on the scriptures at soulforce.org is also very, very valuable.
Yes, it is. And SoulForce is a great organization. I mean, the whole idea, borrowing from the Freedom Ride, as a recovering evangelical, as I call myself, I really, really, their work is really, really important. And, you know, people take different approaches. Some people don't like their approach. Some people do. But I think it's kind of like a lot of things, that, you know, you use kind of a shotgun approach, and some people are visual learners, some people are audio learners, some people learn by reading, by touching. So the broadest appeal you can get in techniques and methods, you know, gives you the greater chance to reach more people. Because I think I've found doing the seminars across the country that really education is really such a key, whatever the issue is, that even when we went to a place and our seminar was mainly attended by lesbian, gay, and bisexual people from a already welcoming congregation or a real ally in equality, okay, when we found that, we found that there was also a lack of education among some of our allies. For example, we'd be in a place and all of a sudden half of our workshop would be from lesbian, gay, and bisexual members of churches or congregations to tell us that they didn't know anything about trans either. And so I think sometimes we assume that other people in our movement know more than they know. And so, again, the importance of education gets to be, you know, ranks right up there, I think, as part of all these things that have been suggested. And we've got a few seconds here until we head into break. So if anyone, think it's a great time to kind of sharpen your pencils and see if there's anything you want to ask about or talk about, as we'll come in and start with some new questions, look at some more aspects of full inclusion of lesbian and gay, bisexual, and transgender people in our faith community. Because like in my church, my local church here, I have basically a straight congregation, but almost half of our church leadership this year is LGBT, not by design, not by filling any quotas, but just because we have a group of people who decided they just want to take us as we are, and that just does not matter, which I think is the ultimate goal of most of our inclusion, is that we no longer need to have something about LGBT inclusion or feminist inclusion or African-American inclusion. We don't need hyphenated theologies anymore. It's just a theology of inclusion and just a theology of love and acceptance and getting close to our divine roots and our divine creators. And that I think that, again, is kind of education, not necessarily seminars. It's educated when we live it out, when our neighbors see it, when people see it around us or ask us questions and how we behave. But I think when we come back from break, we're going to talk about the importance of the faith voice in equality, since much of the opposition to LGBT equality comes from different religious groups misusing some scriptures or focusing on those, what we call the clobber scriptures, those seven scriptures. And but it's the faith voice of progressive congregations is becoming more and more evident in the overall lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender movement. And so we might look at that a little bit, at just what an important role it is in the relationship between faith communities and the push and goal for equality for LGBT people. It was key in racial equality. I don't think the church really met that that same mark with feminist equality, since some churches are still grappling with those issues when they've gotten hit with the LGBT issues. I encountered that in doing the service in the Valley not long ago, that they were largely a conservative congregation, and they were shocked that a woman was ordained. So those still exist in some places, even here in California. So we know that it exists in other places too. So it's really, really up to us to begin to decide that, and our response to that as we encounter these issues. And that's what this program is about, is really not telling you what to do, not telling you what to think, but just looking at an issue, tossing out some ideas, sitting around the table, and letting all of you join the conversation. So that anyone who is listening out there, please, give us a call. I'll handle your call the best I can. I am new at this, so if I have bumps and in the road and a little fumble here and there, I apologize in advance. Today has been kind of a crazy day, as I said at the outset of the program, what happened here at our venue. And so things are not what we planned. And isn't that so true in our faith walk, that things are often not what we planned? And we have a picture, and apparently the divine has a different picture, because she seems to be painting it a bit differently for us. But it's still, as long as we get there, we're okay. And whatever path you take, and I think that's what I've gained through my time, and really seen through a lot of the HRC things and working with people like Harry. Seems like, Harry, every time I work with you on something, whether it's this or clergy call, I have some kind of health issue. So I don't blame it on you. It's just timing, I guess. But
we were so glad when you came to the clergy call, even though you were just up from heart trouble, if I remember correctly. It was,
yes,
a real witness to everyone there that you were willing to come and be with us and represent California and the Bay Area in your conversations with your members of Congress on Capitol Hill. The Clergy Call was a great event, wasn't it? We had more than 300.
It was awesome.
Yeah, we had more than 300 clergy from all 50 states.
Yep.
That's great.
Standing on that riser with 300 clergy from every state in the union getting ready to tromp the halls of Congress with their senators and congressmen, and just hearing the 11 speakers that we had briefly talk about why they support, especially when we had the evangelical Tony Campolo, who even when I was in my previous life as an evangelical minister, a real hell and damnation minister, I always liked Tony. And so his appearance there was just so incredible as that bridge into a community that most of us as progressive people of faith kind of stay away from. And so it really shows us that there are individuals out there that we can reach if we can find the right key and just look and keep at it hard enough, we can find it. And they're there.
Well, you know, Tony is a great example of the power of a persistent spouse. His wife Peggy
yes.
swears that it's been pillow talk over all the years that has moved Tony. They had a house in Provincetown where they vacationed and loved all of their gay neighbors. And she began to point out to Tony that what he was saying about LGBT people out in the world, of course they didn't really have transgender stuff in their mouths at the time, but lesbian and gay people, what he was saying didn't jive with what he experienced of lesbian and gay people who were their neighbors in P-Town. And over the years they have both moved and grown together. There's another great resource your listeners may be interested in. Walter Wink wrote a great little book about homosexuality in the church. The author's name is Walter Wink, W-I-N-K, and it's available through Barnes & Noble and other outlets, Amazon, that contains a series of essays from various people, and Peggy wrote a beautiful essay in that book about that experience.
I think I heard them once debate Tony and his wife debating same-sex marriage together, and while he is a supporter of inclusion, full inclusion of in our faith communities, he has a slightly different position on same-sex marriage. And his wife, of course, is an ardent supporter of same-sex marriage. But even in their disagreement, what I really appreciated about him was, you know, if Jesus didn't say anything about it, then it just ain't that big a deal. It's not big enough for us to divorce over. It's not big enough to split a church over. And it's just not that big of a deal. And that just really resonated with me that, you know, I found, I think especially when I was going through my heart trouble and thought I was going to die, that my perspective changed. And all of a sudden things I used to think were important, like evolution, you know, the Bible isn't a scientific text, never intended to be. And so whatever process we use to create us, we got created. So I really don't care about the process. That's really kind of moot. It's fun to, you know, kind of circulate around your head and get it around and, you know, toss it around. It's fun to toss all this stuff around. But in the end, much of it just is not important. And frankly, I think sidetracks us from the real mission of the gospel, of really going out and ministering to the poor, the outcast, the prisoner, the disadvantaged, people who are hurting, regardless of their need. And so I just find a lot of that now is just a distraction on either side of the issue, just letting it divert so much of our time and resource away from really ministering to people. So you ought not give a preacher a microphone. dangerous stuff.
But you know, we're trying to get folks to pick up those microphones, ministers around the country to be saying that more often than they have been. Roland is a big part of California Faith for Equality, and is he and CLGS and the other organizations that he's part of in the Bay Area are sort of the Northern California anchor for California Faith for Equality. We are proud that HRC is working with CFE, California Faith for Equality, to put together a new training program for clergy that we'll be rolling out in 9 cluster trainings around the state in the next year that will teach ministers how to talk about these issues as a part of their routine ministry functions, to certainly be able to know how to, you know, get out of the rallies and do their thing or write letters to the editor and that sort of thing, but also seeing our own congregations as markets for this information. Because as you said, Risha, none of us are where we need to be. We don't understand our own communities well enough yet, and we've got a lot of education yet to do. And the church is the precise place to be doing that. But we need to do it routinely and not just on Pride Sunday, and to build it into our ministry functions.
Well, I know one of the exciting things, I know there are some people at PSR working on worship manuals that are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender focused, that have liturgies included in them developed for those communities that can be incorporated into the overall liturgical structure of the church for those churches that use liturgical models. But let's take a look at the importance of what role do you think people of faith play in the overall issue of equality, as we seem to be gaining a voice in the overall picture of LGBT equality, clergy call, and the various other programs we have. But this is really for both of you. How do you view the real place of that in the overall equality movement?
Well, you know, as Harry mentioned earlier, that LGBT individuals have a lot to teach our straight brothers and sisters about the diversity of sexuality and the acceptance of sexuality. Oftentimes when you get into a Puritan mind frame of sexuality, it leads sometimes to a lot of ignorance. It leads to just a lot of misunderstandings, I guess that's the way I can just put it. But, you know, when it comes to getting people to a place where they can accept themselves, be comfortable with their own skin, particularly when it comes to young people. You know, the suicide rates of gay and lesbian young people, you know, are skyrocketing. I was meeting with some members of Affirmation, which is the gay Mormon organization, and, you know, and going over their statistics of how in the state of Utah, the suicide rate for young people, you know, is disproportionate with other states. And they are, you know, claiming and going back to it's an issue of young people dealing with their own sexuality. So, again, what do we have to contribute to the church as a whole, the church universal, if you will? And I believe it's simply, you know, getting to a place where you can love and accept yourself for who God created you to be. I know for myself, when I was going through my own coming out process, it was an understanding of the difference between condemnation versus conviction. Oftentimes, when you hear people condemn themselves, like "I'm bad," "You're ugly," "You're this," or "You're that," you know, that's the negative self-talk we can give to ourselves, as opposed to the life-affirming, you know, encouraging words or conviction that can come from the Spirit of God. I realized that I was never convicted about my own sexuality. I had only been condemning myself. And so that was one way that I was able to accept myself and be comfortable with my own skin. And that really launched me on really a career of helping other people to accept themselves. And so, again, I believe that we have a lot to offer to the church as a whole of accepting one another as well as accepting ourselves.
Harry, do you have anything you'd like to add to that, or any kind of statements? We're coming up to about a quarter till we're come to the final few minutes of the program, and just kind of summarize where we're at or what we can do about LGBT inclusion. What are some of your thoughts here?
Well, what we know from our work at the Religion and Faith Program at the Human Rights Campaign is that when we use faith language, we are talking the language that most Americans understand and use on a day-to-day basis. when my mother went to see her congressman about the Employment Non-Discrimination Act and said, you know, congressman from South Georgia, the Bible says you ought to tell the truth and that the truth will set you free. But what we've done in this country is set up a culture of deceit where gay people are concerned. We just make them lie all the time, including lying to keep their jobs. And I think this bill would help folks to be able to tell the truth, and that's what the government ought to be doing. That was the moment in that lobby visit when he got what he needed to go back home to South Georgia and defend a vote for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And, that's what we've got to do to help policymakers make the right decision, is give them the tools they need to defend those decisions back home. And then, of course, help to change the hearts and minds of their constituents so that they're safe when they go back on voting day. And they are. What we know is that when they support LGBT inclusion, they're reelected. That, you know, it's overwhelming what the results are politically around the country. And politicians are beginning to wise up and see that that's true. But we've got to give them that language that they can use back home in the district, and that's often faith language.
Well, I know that since the president's going to be your keynote speaker, do you have any inside stuff floating around HRC of what he's going to do? People are anxiously expecting that he's going to announce some kind of, you know, either support or maybe he's going to issue an executive order about don't ask, don't tell, or something like that, that he's going to announce something dramatic or not. Any hints and don't, you know, which if you don't, that's fine. It's just what's the buzz around Washington?
Well, we have been told to expect a speech that we will be very excited to hear. And if I did know anything beyond that, I'm pretty sure it would be a career ender to preempt the president at this point.
Sure.
So I'm not going to do that.
I don't want that. You're too valuable to us there at HRC and the Religious and Faith program, because you really do great work there. And since I've been associated with it, actually a pretty short time since last year, I've really been, when we started working on the transgender curriculum and did the first focus group to, before we rewrote it to the final that we have now, to being a presenter or facilitator for that particular curriculum and clergy call. It's been an amazing association. And so, Roland, for some of your last thoughts here as we get to the wind down of the program.
I was in San Jose yesterday, and I just want to relay a story. I was meeting with a group of clergy, and one member of the clergy shared that she was listening on the radio to two conservative fundamentalist clergy just badmouth, you know, LGBT, you know, individuals and downplaying marriage equality. She called them up and just invited them out for coffee and just started to relay to them just why she's so passionate about inclusion. And through that conversation, a lot of eyes and opinions, a lot of eyes were open and opinions were changed. Whereas, you know, one of the members of the one of the conservative clergy said, well, I thought you were a lesbian, and that's when your congregation was so angry. And she's like, no, I'm not a lesbian. I'm a, you know, straight ally, and, you know, we are a peaceful people. And long story short, by the end of that conversation, both of these clergy members had made pledges to her that they were not going to, you know, continue to badmouth LGBT individuals. Now, and I do believe there was more than just one conversation, but the point I want to make is, you know, there's a saying that I like to quote all the time, that we transform others through our testimonies. And all that means is that, you know, having the courage to tell your story, to tell your neighbors, your coworkers, whoever, and I believe, you know, it's those little things that we do that really help turn the tide. And so I just really want to encourage your listeners
Great.
To have that encouragement to do so, the courage to do so.
Great. Well, as we come up towards the end of the program, I have a lot of people to thank today. Will of the Leland Tea Company especially for opening up for us today in spite of the mess he's in out on the sidewalk and the actions of his landlord. Steve Black, the owner of Lush Lounge, he's a great friend, and I couldn't have gotten by today without his help. Chris Shulman, friend from the Office of Economic Development here, been a close ally for a few months. He, without his help, I wouldn't have been able to make it here today. And I also want to thank the crew there at bbsradio.com. They've been awesome in this whole preparation for this program, putting up with someone who's more used to internet broadcasting, I mean, over-the-air broadcasting than internet broadcasting, and a little more anal about it. And so loosening up is something I'll learn over time with this, but I'm also kind of a recovering perfectionist, so that's not always good in live radio or line work. People like Dan Diaz from Lower Polk Neighbors, who has helped out a lot with equipment and getting things set up and stuff for me to be able to even have this program. And, of course, everyone around in this neighborhood, which is really quite a little focal point in the city, and it's been really, really good for us here, and they've really, really been supportive, and from everything from the phone company where I ordered the conference phone we're using today to be able to get it here in 4 or 5 days after a mess-up from another company's order, to being able to get through the construction and sit here today. It's just been a real blessing, and I think just really, really a great time on this, but I have so many people to thank. And so as we go into that, in just acknowledgement and thanksgiving, which is something, of course, we're directed to do, to go in and out of all things in thanksgiving. I also want to say a special appreciation to my friend Dawn Woody, who is the director, founder of OPTIC, Outreach Program for Transgenders in Crisis, who is now in Kennewick, Washington, setting up a transitional housing facility for transgender clients. And this morning I called her. We worked together here in San Francisco for several years, and I was a mess this morning, and called her up just to help settle me down. And so I really want to thank her and applaud her work up in the Tri-Cities area for what she's doing there, the step in that, and the church, the MCC congregation there that stepped out to really join up with you and partner with you to create that facility. It's been really, really incredible. And, of course, my guest, Harry, any more final thoughts?
Well, Risa, just again, congratulations on the great kickoff of this program. It's going to be a very valuable resource to people as they learn about it and are able to give their voices to the movement, too. And I'm grateful for this opportunity to share a little bit about the work of the Human Rights Campaign and also our colleagues at the other national organizations, and to be on the phone with my great friend Roland Stringfellow, who is such a terrific colleague in this work at the Center for Lesbian and Gay Studies. So thank you.
Thank you, Harry.
Well, Harry, we really I've always appreciated my work with you at the HRC and your staff, Sharon, Joanna. What hard work they do and what great work they do. Clergy Call was awesome. And, you know, I know that that's not an easy task, putting together a program like that. Just arranging the calls and the No Excuses Task Force that was so helpful in me in securing an appointment with my congresswoman, who I have the great advantage of having a congresswoman who happens to be Speaker of the House. But the disadvantage is it is very difficult to get an appointment with her because now the demands on her time have just expanded geometrically. So even to get a member of her staff is not the easiest thing in the world. I think parting the Red Sea was a lot easier. And so I just, you know, really appreciate all their help and almost the national effort that went into getting me that appointment with her. People on both D.C. and here working on it, and situation reports going back daily about getting me my appointment with the speaker. And so I really, really appreciate all the work and how you shepherded me around D.C. when I was in such bad shape in May. And Roland, any more final thoughts from you?
Just again, thank you very much for this opportunity. It's indeed an honor and a pleasure, and many blessings and good luck coming up to you with future broadcasts.
Well, we've got some good shows coming up. This is our second program 2 weeks from now was supposed to be about LGBT families. However, I just found out last night that my guest panelists for that are not available because they can't get the time off work. And so I'll be changing the show around a little bit. I'm looking at it possibly becoming a precursor show to my Veterans Day show on November 11th. And in this precursor show, really talk about people serving now and the issue of don't ask, don't tell. I have some interest from people in Nights Out. That's the LGBT alumni from West Point. I want to talk about that issue. And then on November 11th, talking about a broader issue of veterans in general, from no matter what conflict they're from and their treatment both in the VA hospitals, but more importantly in all of this, how we as individual believers, whatever our faith tradition, be it Christian, Jewish, Muslim, pagan, whatever it is, doesn't matter, whatever path we're on, how we live that out and how we can apply it to our daily life. We all use ancient texts that are sometimes thousands of years old, and you always kind of wonder, what on earth could that say to us in the 21st century? And these were written when they, you know, believed that just breathing caused problems, or mental illness was a demon possession. They had all kinds of beliefs then. They were pre-industrial, pre-democratic. They just didn't have the knowledge we have. So what possibly could they say to us? But I really firmly believe that all these wisdom literatures are really guides. I grew up in hunting and fishing, and where we use field guides, where they tell you what the track of a deer looks like, what the footprint of a cougar looks like, a bobcat and whatever. And the object is to take that and use that knowledge to go encounter the real thing. So in any holy text, be it the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, any text is a guide and a pointer to give us hints on how to encounter the living divine. And that's really the point. We want the living encounter. It's fun to learn about the divine. I really enjoy it. I enjoy digging into theology and things. I really love it. But I would rather spend a day with someone talking about the real presence or the reality and a first-person contact with the divine than spending time in a classroom or anywhere, church pulpit, church pew, about just learning about God. We make friends by being with people. We make friends with the divine by spending time with the divine and doing what the divine likes, which is interacting with people and being open and accepting and affirming of people. And so I firmly believe that that is our mission and that that's what really interests God. And if anything interrupts that or kind of detracts from that or pulls us away, distracts us is a good word, is just not really worth the time doing. And so that's what I look at so many opposition issues to equality, be it LGBT equality, woman equality, racial equality, economic parity, whatever it might be, I think that's the guide. And so I want a day, I really want to see the day when none of these organizations will be necessary. We won't need a human rights campaign. That doesn't mean I don't want you to have a job, Harry.
I'll find something else to do.
But that's really what I want to find, is that kind of a place, because that's really the power, and that really is the manifestation, I believe, of the holy and divine. And when I can look and see and hear and experience the God in someone else and just understand a different person, a different point of view, a different culture, a different place, it's hard. Sometimes I get angry and frustrated, but, I'm just a person and getting more frail by the day, it seems. But that's what I want, and that's what I'm yearning for, and that's what I'm really trying to devote time to and even coming up with the crazy idea of this program, which actually came about a couple of years ago when I was recovering from my stroke, laying in bed, the idea of bringing a more progressive, liberal voice to the table and saying that the conservative evangelicals do not speak for me, that the voices of exclusion and exclusiveness, they don't speak to me. So, that's kind of my views of things in a nutshell, and I'm really hoping as these broadcasts progress that you know, people will get on board with that and offer their viewpoints and their experiences, because we're all the richer for it. We have a creative God who paints a new sunset, new color, new cloud formations every day for it. And so there's creativity there. So that kind of thing is what I want to see.
You have been listening to CI, Confronting the Issues. For comments or questions on this or any CI program, contact us via the web at www.myciradio.com. I'm your host, Risha Ann Young. Join us for the next edition of CI right here on the BBS Radio Network, Channel 2.